7 minutes now past 10 o'clock on WLRN's Evening Jazz, and it's time to welcome our guest. Dr. Mark Gridley has returned to South Florida, and that means he's back in the igloo to drop some more knowledge on us. Welcome back, Mark Gridley.
Oh, it's a delight to be back, Tracy.
We're so glad to have you here. How have you been for the last year or so?
Oh, busy, busy, busy.
Doing what?
Well, last summer I got a commission to write 6,000 words on jazz for the Encyclopedia of Creativity, and I thought to introduce layman to the immense creativity of jazz, I would try to tout the virtues of the giants. And in the process of doing that, it dawned on me that the levels of creativity in jazz improvisation could be divided into maybe four different categories. The first would be mere embellishment or decoration. The second would be paraphrase. The third would be playing patterns either devised by the player himself or learned from the solos of some of the giants that he had memorized, things by Lester Young or Charlie Parker or Sonny Stitt, Clifford Brown, Coltrane. And then the fourth level would be the highest level of originality, where the improviser actually comes up with a brand new melody that fits the chord progression of the piece they were playing. And I think that really displays the true genius of some of the people we're going to hear tonight.
Oh, okay. I guess that means we're ready to go. I was going to ask you to introduce yourself to our friends out in Radio Land.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I am Mark Gridley, and the reason I'm in South Florida every winter, of course, to get away from the ice and snow in the north where I'm based, and to...
Where up north, Mark?
I've been based in Cleveland since I went to graduate school at Case Western Reserve there back in the 70s.
And you're down here now, not only because it's cold in Ohio, but...
Because I love to go kayaking with the alligators in the Everglades.
Good luck for us. Among other things you like to do in South Florida in the winter.
Well, there are a lot of wonderful jazz musicians. The sheer density of world-class musicians in South Florida just boggles the mind. So almost every other night, I go to one of the performances, and there are at least four or five to choose from almost every night in South Florida.
It's the center of the universe in many ways. Anyway, Mark, I mentioned, I put up on my Facebook page, you're going to be teaching a course you have. Is this the first time you've done the lifelong learning course?
Yeah. It's a brand new thing. The last three Thursdays of March and the first Thursday of April, I'll be at the Boca Raton campus of Florida Atlantic University from 3 to 4:30 in the afternoon. And it's a course like what we're doing tonight, which is helping people enjoy modern jazz.
Again, a link to same is on the Real Tracy Fields Facebook page. I'm pretty sure you can also find it at FAU, and I will post it again on my Facebook page. It's also on my Twitter, so as I said there, if you dig what you hear tonight and you want more, sign up. That's coming up in just a few weeks. And I also posted just this evening, a link to one of your books. So, you know, people listening, of course, can tell that you're a learned person with a great deal of knowledge to share. So I guess now we've gotten your credentials out of the way and we can get into tonight's presentation.
First thing we're going to listen to is from an Art Blakey album from 1961. And we're going to listen to it not only because it's just a terrific recording, but because the solo by Wayne Shorter displays this capacity for developing an entirely new melody on top of the chord progressions of the melody that the band's playing. And Wayne Shorter is probably the most accomplished jazz musician in history in this respect. He's able to come up with fresh melodies, and if you listen to his solo carefully, you'll notice how logically he develops it. He'll play this one lick three times, and then when the chords change a little bit later, he'll play it in a lower pitch, and he'll He'll transpose that lick to fit the new chords and then develop it. So it's much like if we were standing over the shoulder of a painter while the painter's applying paint to the canvas, and we're watching the evolution of this piece of art as it happens. Wayne Shorter told me, when I asked him what he's thinking when he's improvising, he told me, "I'm thinking, how can I play something that I've never played before?" And I've checked this out with other experts, and he actually pulls that off. He never plays cliches, and he never plays the same solo twice. So why don't we listen again just to that solo, and keep in mind how logical the development is and how calmly he helps us as listeners follow his thinking. Mm-hmm. think we forgot to credit the composer. Bronislaw Kaper wrote the piece Invitation that we're hearing, and this is the same guy that wrote On Green Dolphin Street, which also came from another movie and also became a jazz standard. Something you might be interested about Wayne is that he told Wynton Marsalis to consider notes like people. Every note, you've got to get to know it just like you get to know a person. Something else he said in an interview many years ago is he said he'd like to make one note so effective he could make a person cry just by playing that one note.
And that's how it's done.
Let's go now to an example where Miles Davis achieves this incredible gift of making a whole new melody that has nothing to do with the melody that the piece began on. This is from a 1945 recording by Charlie Parker called Now's the Time. And we're going to listen not only to the melody that Parker wrote and Parker's improvisation, which was stunning as always. But when we get into Miles, we're going to notice that he lifts up to a level of composition that you really would attribute to someone who had time to sit down with a pen and paper and write out a whole new piece. But he's doing this spontaneously. So let's listen to this rendition of Now's the Time. That was Miles Davis. And the first time I heard that solo, I thought it was almost like a descant, as though he had this capacity to rise up above everything else that was going on in the piece and float in the air with a new melody that fit what was going on underneath. And if if you're not a musician, if you're not a jazz player, it might not dawn on you that these guys are composing pieces of real integrity on the spot. And not only is it spontaneous, but it's demonstrating a tremendous amount of self-restraint, because in their mind, before they play each note, they're editing out other choices that they could be making. So not only is this a gift of the highest order, but it's also an example of exerting serious, very serious discipline. Let's keep those things in mind and listen to that same solo over again. Davis, Now's the Time with Charlie Parker from 1945. Now let's go to a Horace Silver recording of a composition that he titled Gregory Is Here. The reason I'm including this is actually fourfold or fivefold.
Okay. And I'm sure they're all splendid reasons. Tell us about it.
I just don't want to talk more than we play music. But there's a tenor saxophone solo on here by Michael Brecker, who was probably the most influential tenor saxophonist to occur in jazz history after John Coltrane. And this solo is so hot, absolutely blistering, that everybody who I've talked to about it says, yeah, you ought to include this with your book, which I did. This is on a CD that comes with my book. And I remember being on an airplane coming back from a jazz educators conference. I was sitting next to a trumpet player who I had played a bunch of gigs with at Michigan State when we were both students there. And I told him I was considering putting Gregory Is Here on my CD that comes with my book. And he said, oh, my God. I was driving when they played this on the radio, and when they got into Brecker's solo, it was so overwhelming, I had to pull off to the side of the road to listen to the rest of this. So we're going to hear Brecker, then his brother Randy plays a wonderful trumpet solo, although it really sounds to me like flugelhorn. And then Horace Silver, the band leader, is going to play a solo, and we're going to come back to Horace's solo, because like these other ones we've been playing, his logic is so obvious to us that I think it could also be another composition. So we're going to listen to Brecker's solo, we're going to listen to Randy Brecker's solo on trumpet, and then Horace's solo, and then we'll talk a little bit more about the composition. Thank you. Gregory Is Here by Horace Silver with that wonderful solo by Michael Brecker. Reminds me of the first time I heard him. I was at a jazz festival at Notre Dame University in 1968, and my quartet was competing with his quintet from Indiana. And I was just astounded at the technique he had. In fact, that evening, he was playing probably three times as fast as what you just heard. In fact, if what you just heard didn't take your breath away, I think we got to check your pulse. But anyway, Brecker was playing altissimo range figures that were just got me to screaming, literally. I'm sitting there in my chair screaming, and my mother's looking at me all embarrassed because I'm screaming.
Because she's not one of us.
Well, it was an uninhibited response to an incredible solo. And it turns out he won the award as the outstanding instrumentalist at that concert. I won the award as the best flutist, and our two combos tied for first place.
Okay, then.
So let's go back and listen to the Horace Silver solo. I don't know if you noticed this, but Horace started his solo with the same phrase that Randy Brecker ended his solo with. I mean, talk about logic and continuity. I think that's something we really need to keep in mind for Horace, because his solo is simple. He takes extraordinarily brief motifs, and he strings them together in extremely logical way. And like I said, when he's improvising, it's as though he's at the desk with pen and paper writing a new tune. Morris Silver, improvising on his own piece, Gregory is Here.
It's 10:34. This is WLRN's Evening Jazz. I'm the real Tracy Fields. Our guest tonight is Dr. Mark Gridley. He's talking to us about some of the greatest solos that he has run across so far, at least the ones he was able to pick out for sharing with us tonight. We'll be right back with him after these words of importance.
The South Florida Manufacturers Association invites you to their 40th Recognition of Excellence ceremony on March 13th. The keynote is Defining Digital Disruption, presented by the past CEO of General Electric Digital. More at sfma.org/ROE.
Fort Lauderdale Executive Airport is located in the Uptown Business District, 10 minutes from downtown and the beach. Offering corporate aviation, aircraft charter, flight training, 24-hour control tower, and U.S. Customs. More at flyfxe.com.
We've got company tonight up here in the igloo. Dr. Mark Gridley is back in South Florida, which means he's back with us here on Evening Jazz. Dr. Gridley sharing some information with us tonight, as I said, about some of the finest in jazz soloing. Dr. Gridley, as you were.
Let's go to 1927 and listen to a piece called Savoy Blues, which was written by the trombonist in this band, Kid Ory, and focus on the way that these musicians develop their solos. In music theory, there's what's called motivic development. Each little lick, in jazz terminology, is called a motive or a motif. And what these guys do so well is take each motif and develop it into something logical. So, as I said earlier, it results in an improvisation that can stand on its own, separate from the melody. So when we listen to this piece, not only are we, of course, going to be delighted by the melody and some of the ensemble parts, but when we get to the solos, there's this terrific guitar solo by Lonnie Johnson, and then Louis, who's always fantastic, and then Kid Ory, the trombone player, and his solo, Kid Ory's solo, has tremendous logic. So let's listen to Savoy Blues from 1927.
Thank you.
You know, something that a lot of people who know classical music might appreciate, and that is some of the great classical composers were also known to be world famous improvisers. In fact, I heard stories that J.S. Bach used to go to competitions with other organists, and they would sit at an organ in some real public place and improvise fugues, if you can believe that. Liszt was said to be a tremendous improviser. Chopin was said to be a tremendous improviser. So when we think about these musicians making up these new tunes on the spot, maybe we can put them in a class with those giants. In fact, I've often said that if Chopin and Liszt were alive today, probably their names would be Keith Jarrett and Herbie Hancock.
Hmm.
So let's go back and let's listen just to those three solos: Lonnie Johnson, the guitar player; Louis, the trumpet player; and Kidori, the trombonist. And think about the fact that each one of their solos could have been the tune. It could have been the original piece by itself. Kidori on the trombone making up a whole new melody, as if he had to. He didn't really have to, because he wrote the Savoy Blues, which was the beginning of the piece. We're going to move now to one of the improvisers who was capable of coming up with a totally fresh solo on every single take of a given tune. We know this because there were alternate takes of some of the Count Basie classics from the 30s and 40s, and every single time Lester Young was given a solo spot, no matter how many times they'd played that piece before, he came up with a totally different solo. So we're talking the highest level of genius, the gift. Yeah.
I keep telling people this is music by and for smart people.
Well, in my attempt to write for a lay audience in this commission to do 6,000 words on jazz for the Encyclopedia of Creativity, I was thrashing around for months on how best to convey the immensity of creativity in jazz without hyperbole. And I had a lot of my friends reading various drafts of my work and saying, no, you can't say that. You can't say that. That's too extreme. But I'm saying it's the truth.
So what happened when you got to the Encyclopedia? Did they challenge your work?
I haven't gotten an editor's response. I made my deadline, but I've been just sitting on my hands wondering. Of course, everything I write, I think it's going to be so profound, it will go in exactly as I submitted it. Which actually did happen for some other encyclopedias I wrote
for. Congratulations.
Yeah, yeah. So Lester Young, okay, tenor saxophonist. He and Wayne Shorter are capable of inventing totally fresh melodies every time they're given an opportunity. This is a piece that was written by Harry Sweets Edison, the trumpet player on the piece. It's called Jive at Five, and I think you will be transported when you hear Lester come in. And then he gets interrupted for about 12 seconds by Harry Sweets Edison, who takes a little trumpet solo, and then Lester Young comes back in. Lester Young. Some of you may be familiar with Stan Getz, and if you're thinking there's some similarities in his style to what you just heard, you're right. This Lester Young solo that we just heard really does anticipate the Stan Getz style. Let's listen once more to this wonderful solo by Lester Young. Count that as probably the single most delightful solo in the history of jazz.
And there you have it.
Just the fluffy, light, cheerful, joyful. I think, actually, when I hear Stan Getz do these kinds of things, that it may not be a coincidence that Prokofiev lived in the same century. Really. When I hear some of these things, I think of Prokofiev and Stravinsky.
And why ever not? I mean, it's all one.
Yeah. So, thinking about Harry Sweets Edison writing this piece and taking that brief solo, I'm recalling the honor I had to be in his band and to tour with Sweets in 1973. And our last gig was in Jacksonville, Florida.
Speaking of it's all one.
Yeah. So let's go back to Miles. This is a piece that Miles transformed from an old Benny Goodman, Charlie Christian recording they called Soft Winds. They retitled it, actually, for a character made famous in a routine, a comedy routine, by Red Skelton, and they called it Freddie the Freeloader. Now, we do want to focus on the Miles solo, but after the melody is done, we go into a very, very swinging and very melodic solo by the pianist Wynton Kelly. And the logic in his lines should be obvious to anybody who listens to it. In fact, when I was teaching a jazz appreciation course in Cleveland years ago, I had a couple students choreograph an entire dance to this Wynton Kelly piano solo that comes before the Miles solo. Now, when you get into the Miles solo, take a step back from what you're normally expecting, a zillion notes coming out of the bebop trumpet players, and think about his pacing, because he takes his time and uses silence almost as well as he uses the notes that he plays. Every note is perfectly played. And it may be no coincidence that Miles was also a boxer. In fact, he would turn down tour dates in Europe if the town didn't have a gym where he could work out with a boxer, a trainer. And if they think about timing in the boxing world, I think you might remember somebody who we all admired who said, "Float like a butterfly, sting like a bee. What the hands can't do if the eyes don't see." If you think about the timing that the great fighter Muhammad Ali used with all his fancy footwork, waiting for the perfect moment to land a blow, think about Miles waiting for the perfect moment in each measure to land that blow, and think about his floating atop this incredible rhythm section that's so stable and so mellow. Wynton Kelly on piano, Paul Chambers on bass, Jimmy Cobb on drums. Maybe it's a stretch, but I think it's no coincidence that... I think it would be obvious that you're appreciating the exquisite timing, the perfect pacing of every note in that solo. And I think it's no coincidence that Miles admired Willie Nelson, Orson Welles, and Ahmad Jamal.
That's good to know.
And I think it's because all of those people had exquisite pacing. Their timing was dramatic without being overbearing. And this is totally the opposite of what we think of in bebop trumpet styles, where they're playing a zillion notes. Even the best of Miles' competitors didn't stop and play as slowly and carefully as he does on this solo. So let's listen again just to the Miles Davis solo. Miles Davis with one of the most well-crafted improvisations in all jazz history. His solo on Freddy the Freeloader from the Miles Davis album Kind of Blue from 1959.
It is, for all practical purposes, all right, it's still a few seconds before 11 o'clock here on WLRN and HD1, Miami, Fort Lauderdale, WKWM and HD1, Marathon, Key West. There's more Miles Davis and more from Dr. Mark Gridley, but first, these words of importance.
Basie, Ellington, Monk, and many others are featured in Jazz in the Key of Ellison, a new concert production inspired by the musical life of America's iconic writer, Ralph Ellison, on Friday, February 8th. You can join the Arts Center for what promises to be an evening of incredible jazz music in celebration of Ellison's life. Jazz in the Key of Ellison, on Friday, February 8th. Tickets at artscenter.org.
Art Fort Lauderdale's Art Fair on the Water is hosted at Waterfront Homes and along the Intracoastal Waterway via water taxi, January 24th through 27th. Tickets and details at artfortlauderdale.com. Funded in part by Broward Cultural Division and Interactive Initiative.
Florida Atlantic University has been offering the course in financial and estate planning in retirement for over 12 years, providing information to take control of your financial future. It covers three sessions, including investment strategies, tax and estate planning, understanding outstanding Social Security benefits, IRAs, and more. Classes run continuously in Boca, Davie, and Jupiter. Evening classes are available. Classes start February 5th in Davie and February 6th in Boca. More at FAURetirementplanning.com.
Speaking of Florida Atlantic University, Dr. Mark Gridley is going to be teaching a course in Boca Raton as part of the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute's, what is it, snowbird curriculum, a winter curriculum. At any rate, Dr. Gridley will be teaching, in addition to his usual hanging out and kayaking with the alligators. Mark, I just posted the information about your course once again on the Real Tracy Fields Facebook. I'm about to tweet it out once again. Anything you want folks to know about this before we get back into tonight's presentation?
I think the goal of the course is the most important, and that is, no matter how much you know or don't know about jazz or whatever you think about modern jazz, the goal of this course is to help you, the student, no matter what age you are, find something in modern jazz that you've never had before that will give you pleasure for the rest of your life.
And can't beat that with a stick. Dr. Mark Gridley will be instructing at the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute, Boca Raton. Have I covered it? Yeah, at any rate, Dr. Gridley has a course coming up sort of along the lines of what we're doing here now. If you dig this and you want more of it, as I said, I have posted the links. Or you can just look for Osher Lifelong Learning Institute, Boca Raton. Mark, I think it's time for you to talk now.
Well, let's get back to the examples that I think are just absolutely unbelievable in their originality and their integrity. And the thing we're going to lead up to here is the fifth chorus of a Wayne Shorter sax solo on a piece that he wrote called 81 from the Miles Davis album ESP. And in the process of getting up to his solo, the fifth chorus, which I'm so knocked out by, we're going to hear a terrific solo by Miles Davis on trumpet, which is also very, very well constructed, well paced, totally original. And as the piece we heard before, Freddy the Freeloader, this is also a 12-bar blues. Wayne Shorter's fifth solo chorus on 81 from the Miles Davis ESP album of 1965. It's as though Wayne is allowing us to share his thinking as it evolves. And he's executing these fresh ideas with passion and swing feeling.
How cool is that?
It's all together. That's Wayne Shorter. I think maybe that's why he was honored at the Kennedy Center.
Among other reasons, I dare say.
Yeah, yeah. We could do a whole show just on his compositions, to say nothing about the compositional nature of his improvisations, which
Indeed.
We're hearing tonight. Let's listen just to that very last solo chorus that moves me so much because it's so logical and so melodic that you could put words to it. Shorter. Now let's go to a session that was reputed to be totally spontaneous. Dave Brubeck usually had plans with his producer and his men before they went into a studio and did an album, but this time they had absolutely no plans at all. Dave Brubeck, saxophonist Paul Desmond, bassist Eugene Wright, and drummer Joe Morello just walked into the studio, and they said, what's happening these days? There's a new showing of that old movie, Gone with the Wind. Okay, well, let's do some tunes from the South. How about Georgia on My Mind by Hoagie Carmichael? So that was it. They just said, okay, we'll do it. And this turns out to be the most reflective, the most gentle recording in the entire output by Brubeck. And after Brubeck plays the melody that Hoagie Carmichael wrote, all of the improvisations that follow are of a quality that competes with that masterful quality of the original Georgia on My Mind melody by Hoagie Carmichael. When Paul Desmond comes in, I swear it's like a bird taking flight, and then he starts singing with an exhilaration that just makes everybody ever played this for absolutely transfixed. So let's listen to Georgia on My Mind and pay particular attention to the sax solos and the piano solos after the melody, knowing that they're all fresh. They're made up on the spot, and they have total integrity. Thank you. Dave Brubeck on piano, Paul Desmond on alto sax, playing Hoagy Carmichael's Georgia on My Mind.
But, wow.
Yeah. But most of the time, they weren't playing Hoagy Carmichael's Georgia on My Mind. They were making up their own song using those chord changes. And I assume you appreciated Desmond's improvisation as being soaring and impassioned and just totally inspired.
Yeah, you ain't never lied about that one, Doc.
Brubeck's piano improvisation at the end is so gentle and filled with love. In fact, like Wayne Shorter, Brubeck was so gifted as a melodic genius that almost every solo on every album that Brubeck recorded is fresh. No borrowing, no cliches, no repetition.
It's amazing.
And in fact, incidentally, Brubeck has also composed an entire library of choral music that has nothing to do with jazz.
Fabulous.
Let's listen to the Desmond improvisation and the Brubeck improvisation one more time now that we've got our ears totally sensitized. Thank you. Dave Brubeck improvising on Georgia on My Mind. Let's go to a piece that has entirely different feeling if you're not totally asleep by now.
Nah.
And mellowed out. We'll wake you up now. This is a song that came from the Broadway musical Fiddler on the Roof, written by Jerry Bock. It's called Sunrise Sunset. I found this on a Lee Morgan album, and the title of the album is a play on words. The title of this album is Delightful Lee. Delightful Lee?
Indeed.
And the reason we're playing it tonight is, again, to show how an improviser can put an improvisation together that's just chock full of melodic fragments. So when we jump into this, of course, we're going to hear Wayne Shorter. And then the band parts, which I think are just marvelous, were arranged by Oliver Nelson. And the drumming is some terrific accompaniment and interaction by the great Philly Joe Jones. And the pianist is McCoy Tyner. Now you're getting a little taste of the band leader, the trumpet player, Lee Morgan. But as I mentioned, the reason for bringing this in is to hear a really impassioned improvisation by Wayne Shorter, which also has tremendous melodic integrity. And I love that accompaniment, what Oliver Nelson wrote for the band parts. And like I said, with Philly Joe Jones on drums and McCoy Tyner on piano, it's just terrific. But there's an awful lot in that Wayne Shorter solo, and he plays a lot of notes that are sort of extraneous to some of his basic motifs. So I think if we listen again to just his solo, you can zero in. It's almost like being on a scavenger hunt. You can find all these little melodic fragments that are woven in to this very rich fabric that is Wayne Shorter's impassioned solo. Did you notice how he uses repetition very effectively? If you haven't noticed that already on the other pieces, the last couple of phrases in that had the same little fragment played over and over, but never in a boring way. And repetition is one of the stock pieces in the tool case of the composer. And he is a composer. As I mentioned before, we could do an entire show just of his compositions. In fact, there are entire courses taught at least at two colleges I know of devoted entirely to Wayne Shorter compositions.
As well there might be.
So this is a giant. He's still alive, unlike most of the other people we've been listening to today. He's working on an opera right now. He's collaborating with Esperanza Spalding and writing an opera.
Lovely. Can't wait.
And if you saw the Kennedy Center Honors, they actually had Renee Fleming singing some operatic pieces from another album that just came out recently. Let's go to the leader of the most dynamic band to come out of what in jazz history is termed hard bop era, Art Blakey, this drummer who had a sense of musicality that was orchestral. And I think it's no coincidence he began his career as a pianist. He's from Pittsburgh. And the story is that as he's developing his career, he looks around and here are two other piano players in the same town named Ahmad Jamal and Errol Garner.
Well, yeah, that would cause pretty much anybody to change their plans, I think.
So he became a drummer. But if you listen to his work across his whole career, you find that his drumming is orchestral. He has a sense of drama. And I just think all his albums are just fantastic. But this next piece comes from my favorite of all the albums. It's the only one he made for the Impulse Record Company. And it's the one from which we drew the invitation track that we began this show with, Invitation. This is a track called A La Mode, and the composition is by the trombonist on this record, Curtis Fuller. So we're going to hear solos by Wayne Shorter, the Lee Morgan, who was the leader on the last track that we heard, The Sunrise Sunset, and Curtis Fuller. And I think you're going to notice that every one of these solos has tremendous internal logic to it. Not only are these impassioned solos and they're just swinging and hot, but they're very, very well constructed. And now that you've already heard a couple Wayne Shorter, I think you're going to notice immediately the intelligence in his improvisations on A La Mode. Thank you. Alla Mode, composed by the trombonist on the track, Curtis Fuller, being driven passionately by the leader of the band, drummer Art Blakey. It just amazes me at how these guys can think so clearly and edit their solos spontaneously in the midst of such excitement as Blakey generates.
It's a wonderful thing.
I think of the football players in the midst of a game where fans are screaming, their bodies are hurting, and any moment they're about to be crushed, yet they can think of all the different moves to make and strategies to get their play to succeed, despite all those distractions, to keep their head clear, always astounds me.
You know, I never thought about it in exactly those terms, Mark, but I think you draw a legitimate parallel.
I can barely keep my head clear when I'm driving I-95, where everybody's swerving around me at 90 miles an hour and five lanes in the traffic.
Yep.
So, let's go back. Now that we've had a little introduction, we broke the ice, and we know what these sounds are like. Second time around, listen for the logic and continuity in each one of these solos. Wayne Schroeder at tenor sax, Lee Morgan trumpet, and Curtis Fuller on trombone.
Thank you.
Hollow Mode from the 1961 album on the Impulse record label called Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers, featuring center saxophonist Wayne Shorter, trumpeter Lee Morgan, trombonist Curtis Fuller, the composer of the piece.
And if you like that tune, well, there's more where that came from. Stay tuned. But right now, I want to take a moment to thank Dr. Mark Gridley for taking time away from the alligators and the kayaking to come up and spend a few minutes with us here in the igloo.
Delightful. Absolutely. Always delightful.
And, of course, since you're going to be in South Florida for a few weeks more, I guess this is a chance to tell the folks one more time about your course at the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute in Boca.
The last 3 Thursdays in March and the first Thursday in April, from 3 o'clock till 4:30 p.m., we're going to offer a course on enjoying modern jazz. In fact, you might even hear analyses of some of the same pieces that Tracy let me play tonight.
And I've posted information about that on the Real Tracy Fields Facebook page and also tweeted about it. Further information, of course, at olliboca.fau.edu. That's O-L-L-I as in all, Osher Lifelong Learning Institute at boca.fau.edu. Dr. Gridley, Dr. Mark Gridley, noted jazz educator and historian and scholar, I think. That probably pretty much covers it. Again, I want to thank you for coming up to spend some time with us tonight. Anything you want to tell our friends before we say nighty-night?
Every night from 9:30 till 1 a.m., you should be tuned to 91.3. And if you're not in the South Florida listening region, you should have WLRN.org turned on your computer.
Thanks, Mark. Your check is in the mail.